Well, you know how it can be, baby. Someone who's been bluffing all their life all of a sudden feels compelled to tell you the truth. Never gave two thoughts to it, maybe. And now you can't shut him up. It's like you're a priest hearing his confessions of a misspent youth. And you'd like to tell him some damn thing, baby. But what in the world would be that thing to say? Ah, when things quiet down round here, let's you and I slip around, saddle up and ride on out of way. And you know how it can be, darling. Someone's always showing up with a cake and a candle on a day you'd like just as soon let slip by. Admit it, you'd be hurt if they forgot about you, maybe. Oh, but every year it's getting a little harder thinking about how and where and when you're gonna have to say goodbye. And they just keep coming at you, baby. They just keep coming, cutting you a big old slice of this day. But when things settle down around here, let's you and I slip around, saddle up, and ride on our way.
David Bromberg and Company, live in Studio A here on WFUV. David, maybe you should introduce this company to our listeners out there.
This is Brian Mitchell playing the B3 and all the keyboards. Tony Leone playing the drums. And Byron Isaacs playing the bass. And me playing guitar.
And we have some background vocals
as
well.
Kathleen Weber and Nancy Josephson singing backup.
Who are also known as...
Angel Band in the house.
Yes, who've been in the house. And Tony and Byron, members of Ola Bell, among other things. And Brian, man, you've been part of Mojo Mancini and Levon Helm's band and who knows what all. So you've got nothing but all-stars here in the studio, but we expect nothing less from David Bromberg. So this new record, which has just been released on Appleseed Records, is called Use Me. I think it could be called Chutzpah, couldn't it?
Yeah, it could be.
Tell us the concept behind this CD.
Well... it really was chutzpah. I called up a bunch of musicians whose music I admire and I thought I might have some little relationship with. And I asked each one of them to write a song for me and then to produce me doing it. And strangely enough, most of them said, yeah. And I think the remarkable thing is, I mean, first of all, it's remarkable that they did it. I'm humbled that these guys would do that.
I betcha.
But they all knew how to use me.
Hmm. And I hope we'll explore some of those uses in the course of this conversation. Now, that first song we just heard is one that you recorded with John Hiatt, right?
Right.
And he was kind of responsible in a way for generating this idea, am I right?
Yeah, well, he was playing in town with Lyle Lovett, and they called me up and asked me to come down, and I thought they wanted me to accompany him, but they wanted me to sing a few tunes.
Hmm.
And I sang a couple, and Lyle came back on stage. He said, do another, which was really nice. And afterwards, John said, you know, you ought to come down to Nashville, and we'll fool around in my studio. So I was talking to Nancy about it, and she came up with the idea of my calling people up and asking them to write songs for me and producing it.
Oh, there's the brains behind the operation, as always, right? The lady of the house. Anyway, you recorded a couple of sessions in Nashville, right?
Three.
Mm-hmm.
We did the Hiatt one and one with Tim O'Brien. And then later we went back down and did one with Vince Gill.
Now, your friendship with Vince goes back a long way, am I right?
Yes and no.
Yeah.
I knew of him when he was the hotshot bluegrass mandolin player and guitar player.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was touring with my band, he was with Pure Prairie League.
A wonderful country rock band.
And we did a lot of the same venues, but never at the same time. And the first time I really met him was when I walked into his home to record the track.
And he seems like such a warm, funny, generous person.
Yep. He's remarkable. He's warm, funny, generous, and talented. I mean, he's an incredible singer and guitar player. And songwriter. And, you know, we recorded in his home. He's got this studio. It's really neat. But on the wall, there's instruments all around, like a great collection of guitars. And he's got amps built into the walls. But the two shelves that don't have instruments on them have 27 Grammys.
Got to make room for that, right. Woo. Well, you were a Grammy nominee. Right? For the album, which was kind of your comeback record?
Yeah, yeah. And, with another $1.50, I could get on a subway.
Not even that, actually. That shows you we're all out of date with that. Well, the thing about some of those Nashville cats is that they can play anything. And certainly that's true of Tim O'Brien.
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, Tim makes it all look easy. Singing, too, and mm-hmm. songwriting. It's just everything just kind of flows out of him like breathing.
So what's the song that you did with Tim?
It's called Blue Has Fallen.
Could you do that one for us here?
Sure.
Now, David has switched from his well-traveled electric guitar. I wanted to ask you about that and maybe come back to that. That looks like it's got a few miles on it.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, and you picked up your acoustic guitar.
Yeah. Last night, I hardly had a choice. I couldn't stand the sound of my own voice. You should have heard me talking on the telephone. All morning long, nothing good to say. You came and tried to help me, but I pushed you away. I said, I'm too hot to handle. Better leave me alone. A blue is falling on me again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it, but I never win. A blue is falling on me again. Now we live live together in this place and time, but I feel all alone and it's an awful crime. I gotta slip away for a day or two. I wanna dig a hole so deep and wide I can bury all the hurt and the pain inside. I'm afraid of myself, and I'm afraid for you. Blue is falling on me again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it, but I never win. Blue is falling on me again. Telling jokes and riding high, and something turns a switch, it all goes awry. Starts pushing me down, down to my knees. You know I always hate it when I act this way. I try and keep it from coming, but it comes anyway. It's nothing about you, it's all about me. A blue is falling on me again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it, but I never win. Blue is falling on me again. No one hears me calling as it pulls me in. I try to fight it, but I never win. Blue is falling on me again.
That song is Blue is Fallen, and it was written by Tim O'Brien and recorded with David Bromberg in Nashville as part of David's album called Use Me. We don't have Tim in the studio today, but we have some really fine musicians, and Brian Mitchell made a little move there from the Hammond B3 over to the piano there, and we did have Nancy and Kathleen from Angel Band doing some backup vocals on
Nancy
that
tune. And Tim sang backup on the CD.
Yeah. You got in on some of the action, huh, Nancy?
And why not?
So when you were at Vince Gill's house, did you get any brownies from Amy Grant, his wife, or anything like that to kind of make it homey?
Didn't meet Amy.
Oh.
No, I would have liked to have, but I didn't get to meet her.
So it goes. Well, I'm sure you have great stories to tell about some of these other sessions. Now, going back to do this, in effect, is kind of a sideman on these songs that were commissioned by you. Did it take you back to your days in some way as being the sideman, how you kind of got started?
There were a few sessions. I mean, most particularly maybe the last track. The CD was called Use Me to Begin With. And the last track that we recorded, when I asked the Butcher Brothers, Phil Niccolo and Joe Niccolo, to produce one, they said, why don't we do Use Me? And when we were recording that, it really took me back to my days as a session player.
That got started, what, mid-60s? Late 60s?
Mid-60s.
Yeah. What was the first? Do you remember?
The first thing I played on?
Yeah.
It was an album by Screaming Tony McKay, but I don't have a copy of it.
Not Screaming Jay Hawkins?
No, Screaming Tony McKay.
Okay.
And then the next two were with a guy named Rusty Evans, who later moved to California and called himself Rye Cooper. This was before anybody knew Rye Cooter's name.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it's very funny. And this, they were, what do you call it when you take advantage of something? They were an exploitation of the psychedelic movement. You know, I mean, the lead singer was a wonderful woman who was a secretary at Oak Publications. You know, it was hardly a psychedelic band. I remember the first one of the two. We recorded on Cameo Parkway, and as we left the studio, Question Mark and the Mysterians were coming in.
Ooh, okay. That's good music trivia right there. What made you in so much demand? Was that you could play anything?
I don't know. I'm just happy that I was. I know that, you know, we did a track with Mac Rebenek, with Dr. John.
Right.
And I met Dr. John in Atlantic Studios because Arif Mardin used to call us for sessions. And I always thought that he would call us together because we were like his seasonings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, neither one of us could sound like a studio musician. We just did what we did.
And he's such a classy guy. I mean, it's great to see him healthy and hear him with you on the record.
He's wonderful.
Yeah.
He's really just a sweetheart. We did some video, you know. The video's not going to come out till September, but there's a video of the recording, some of the recording sessions and a lot of other stuff.
Of course, he figured in the HBO series Tremé, which was shot in New Orleans. Did you get to see any of that?
Yeah, I saw Mac, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Dr. John and the first, a lot of Alan Toussaint in the beginning season, and Steve Earle had a big role this
year. Yeah.
And not such a happy resolution to that. But I loved that series. It just seemed to me to capture the spirit of New Orleans perfectly. Now, you actually recorded these sessions in so many different studios around the country. I mean, you had Nashville, you had New Orleans, you had L.A. and the East Coast. Did it give you a sense of really a different feel, a different vibe regionally, wherever you went?
I think maybe this is a hard thing to pin down because it's not scientific, you know. Well, I had 6.7% of New Orleans, but, I mean, how can you be in New Orleans and not feel like you're in New Orleans?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'd say maybe it did.
You went out to L.A., you recorded a couple things in L.A., or one thing, I guess, in particular, right, with Los Lobos?
With Los Lobos, yeah.
Now, what's your connection with those guys?
Well, that's interesting, too. I did a project for a company called Rabbit Ears.
Oh, the children's?
The children's stuff.
Uh-huh.
And when I was in the studio, the person from Rabbit Ears who was there, just to make sure we didn't wreck anything, I think, told me that they'd just done one with Los Lobos, and David Hidalgo had said very nice things about me. So I thought, hell, why don't I ask him? So I asked him, and he said, yeah.
And he got the whole band together
for
you?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we don't have Los Lobos here, although we love Los Lobos at FUV. They were our Artists of the Year this past year.
They're a fantastic band.
Yeah. They had the place jumping, I got to tell you. People dressed up and dancing. But you got a pretty good group of musicians here. Do you want to do that song?
Sure.
You can hear it? Okay.
I never thought I'd do an album with a Mexican waltz on it, but here it is.
Well, you've covered just about everything else in your live shows.
Yeah, I guess so. Child, and the first school bell rang, kids running around you while all the birds sang, and then you'd look at your mother as the tears filled her eyes, and you know it's a long goodbye. When you first found her and said she's the one, the skies seemed to open cause the searching was done. And then she was gone in the blink of an eye. And you know it's a long goodbye. Spinning and spinning the world like a top. The wheels keep turning, seem never to stop. All of a sudden, rain falls from the sky and she cries. And it's a long goodbye. All right, the last time he wrote, he sent her some money, 'cause he knew she was broke. Then came a letter with a medal inside. And you know it's a long goodbye. When I got home, there were lights on the tree. The kids were all up, they were waiting for me. Then I awoke with a tear and a sigh. And you know it's a long goodbye. Spinning and spinning, the world like a top. Wheels keep turning, seem never to stop. All of a sudden, rain falls from the sky and she cries. It's a long goodbye. It's a long goodbye. It's a long goodbye.
So I had Brian Mitchell move on to the accordion for that one. Tune written by David Hidalgo and Luis Perez of Los Lobos. And it's a tune called The Long Goodbye, which you'll find on the new CD called Use Me by David Bromberg, who's our guest here in Studio A on WFUV. Now, another performer with some Mexican blood was part of this project, too. I'm talking about Linda Ronstadt.
Yes.
And you've worked with her. You've worked with her a few times over the years.
She's an old friend.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I just wanted to involve her somehow, you know, get her to do it. She doesn't write, but she picked out a tune.
You know, I've had J.D. Souther in the studio a couple times, who was one time her boyfriend and remains a close friend of hers. He said she is such an amazing musician and one of the smartest people he knows.
I'll go with that. And she really, I took her out of her comfort zone. You know, it was always a risk with all of these that I would be taken out of my comfort zone. But with Linda, you know, she's a very good producer. She produced Aaron Neville mm-hmm. because she wanted him to have a hit record. And her production got him a hit record. But the way that she generally produces is she gets the triple scale guys from L.A. and she knows how to use them. And I wanted to do this real low key, just acoustic guitar and bass and a couple backup vocals. And that was not her modus operandi, but she did such a good job.
Mm. She was also a good friend of our mutual friend, the late, much-missed Phoebe Snow.
Yes. They did a song together on Saturday Night Live that I'd been telling both of them to do for years.
What was that?
The Shoop Shoop song.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You and I sat together at the service for Phoebe, and I know you went back to the late 60s with her, right?
Oh, yeah. We did a video together where she told the story about the first time we met, where we were coming out of that basement club on Bleecker Street. I forget what it was called. It was across the street from the Bitter End, underneath the Village Gate. Anyhow, I was walking down the street with some friends, and Phoebe ran up to me, and she said, "Mr. Bromberg, Mr. Bromberg, I sing and I play guitar and I write." And I said, "Let you entertain me." And she did, you know. She and Charlie Parker, who was her boyfriend, a poet, would come up to my apartment.
He was the poetry man.
He was the poetry man. Yeah. Not the sax player, but
right.
Yeah. And that was before she really learned how to sing, too. I mean, she could sing, but the five octaves came later.
So I guess it's safe to say if she were around, she probably would have been part of this project, too.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Now, you at one point were a musicology major, right? Or going studying musicology at Columbia before
yeah.
the music business took you off on its own little ride?
I took a leave of absence. I don't know if they'll take me back.
Were you always, well, first of all, what was your intention at that time?
Well, nobody specifically said you're going to be a professional person and wear a white shirt. But I understood that's what was supposed to happen. And I was in love with music, so I figured, well, I'll learn musicology and I'll do something with that. And I took a leave of absence and discovered Greenwich Village and became... well, here's the funny thing. I remember a party at my parents' house when a friend of theirs took me aside and said, you know, they wouldn't say anything to you, but your folks really want you to go back to school, you know, so you'll have something to fall back on.
Fair enough, right?
Right. Well, you know, I stopped performing for 22 years
right.
and studied violins. And when we lost Dick Fiji, who was in my band for a long time, I went out for a service and my accountant, who used to be my manager, came and said, you know, for the last couple of years, you've been spending more money than you earn, and that's not good. But fortunately, you have something to fall back on. And he meant music.
That is, woo, yeah. It wasn't plastics, right?
No.
Sort of that era of plastics.
Yeah.
Were you always into all kinds of music, David?
Yeah. I never saw any reason why I shouldn't play any tune I wanted to play. And later I learned the error of my ways. It is commercial suicide to do that. I guess I keep doing it. I mean, that's kind of the remarkable thing about this CD. Several people have said to me that this CD hangs together better than any of my old ones. And it was all produced in different cities with different producers and different, you know, everything. A lot of the credit goes to Mark Moss, my engineer.
Sure. I mean, do you think that your deepest connection in some ways is with the blues? Or is that just my projecting?
I think it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think with the blues and with gospel music.
You know, people think of you as a guitar hero, and I wonder, you
villain.
Know, is that something that you have a comfort with?
You know, when I started touring, I discovered that I was a target. I would come to a town, these young kids would come and want to play with me, you know, like the young gunslingers.
They wanted to cut
stuff.
You, huh?
So I became a band leader.
And you got musicians who could play anything. Are there young guitarists these days that you admire, whose playing impresses you?
Oh, yeah, there's lots of them.
Yeah.
But it's not fair. I mean, they have all the DVDs that we made, and they could slow records down. We couldn't, you know, you slow it down and still be the same pitch. You know, we couldn't do that stuff. But they're remarkable players today.
You want to mention?
Okay. John Harrington, for example, mm-hmm. a brilliant guitar player.
He's played with Steely Dan.
Yeah, And Rick plays with Mavis.
Oh, I know who you mean. The guy from New Orleans, right? Isn't he from...
Olmstrom, yeah, Rick Olmstrom.
Johnny
yeah.
Duke.
Yeah. Oh, and Johnny Duke.
Yeah.
John, his name is John Lippincott. He's a kid that I... that showed up at one of my blues jams in Wilmington. And he's maybe the best guitar player I ever played with. He's down
really?
In Nashville now. Oh, the kid is unreal.
That's saying a lot.
Hide the women and livestock.
Well, you know, there's a blues guy who makes the women weak at the knees and the men proud to be men. And you played with him on this CD. I'm talking about Keb Mo.
Yes. Yeah, he was great producer, too.
What is the experience like playing with Kevin Moore, a.k.a. Keb Mo?
Well, actually, we used to do shows together way back when.
Mm-hmm. When he was a newcomer?
When he was a newcomer, he'd open shows.
Wow.
And he would call me up sometimes at night, and we'd just talk about doing it, you know, doing shows and playing and things like that. So, but, I mean, he's a seasoned veteran now. And I put myself in his hands, and he did a fantastic job, you know.
Where did that take place?
That was in Washington, and I got Tony to play the drums on the track because it's the East Coast. He was living in L.A. He's just moved to Nashville, and he didn't know any people. So I put the band together, but he really directed the session well, and especially me. He worked with me on the vocals, and I will even confess on the guitar part, removing notes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think your guitar playing has changed a lot over the years?
Oh, absolutely.
How so?
Well, I can't play as fast as I used to, but I hear things differently, and what I like is something soulful. I mean, I don't care what kind of music it is. If it's soulful, I like it. Mm. And if it's not, I don't.
Well, this is a soulful song. Could you do it for us in the studio, the one you did with Keb?
Sure. They've been drilling down in Texas since 1894. And if they drilled a little deeper, they could always find some more. They got a pipeline from Alaska to Iraq and Iran. Now we gotta get it, children, any way we can. This whole world is just a junkie, all strung out on gasoline. They got ships out on the ocean. Digging in the deep blue sea. They're digging in the deep blue sea. Everybody gets greedy when they think the well's gonna run dry. Might have start a war just to keep up the supply. We got to have it to make most everything, from pantyhose to footballs and everything in between. This whole world is just a junkie, all strung out on gasoline. Now they got ships out on the ocean. And they're digging in the deep blue sea. We'll be right back. Fish can't swim. Birds can't fly. But we keep on pumping to keep up the supply. What are we gonna do about the mess we made? You can't run an 18-wheeler child on lemonade. This whole world is just a junkie, all strung out on gasoline. They got ships out on the ocean, and they're digging in the deep blue sea. Yeah, they got ships out on the ocean, digging in the deep blue sea.
Oh, yeah. Getting down and dirty in Studio A here on WFUV. David Bromberg and company. New words to an old blues tune. And actually, it's really about getting down and dirty, literally, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't, you know, I read in a couple places that it's related to an old blues tune. All blues tunes are related. I don't think this one is particularly related to, they're talking about... a Texas flood tune that this is allegedly related to. Blues is blues is blues.
Yeah.
Who was it? Somebody said there's two songs, the Star Spangled Banner and the blues.
I think it was Towns Van Zandt who said there's two kinds of music, the blues and Zippity Doo Dah. same idea, right? Yeah. And Duke Ellington said there's, get the cue of the rim shot, Tony. What, two kinds of music, good and bad, and I prefer the good, something like that.
Well, with this band, we play both kinds of music, country and western.
That's true, you do. The blues has, of course, all these kind of traditions and stuff. There's kind of that blues bravado, you know, that I think you've managed to incorporate into a lot of your singing and your lyrics and stuff like that over the years, including, I think, on a tune we're going to hear a little bit later on. Is that something you just kind of absorbed over the years, or did you have to kind of sit out and study it?
I don't think I ever sat down to study it. I listened to a lot, and I was in a lot of places. One of the places that I learned the most was when I was leading Reverend Gary Davis around, I would take him to churches. And some of the preachers, including the Reverend, were very impressive. And I believe that if you listen to Freddie King and B.B. King and Albert King... Well, B.B. has said that his tone comes from listening to Lonnie Johnson, and I can hear that. I always thought that actually before he said it.
Hmm.
But his choice of notes is his own. But the phrasing of all of those great blues guitar players, it comes directly from the church.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a preacher's phrasing. It's the difference between rock and roll playing and the blues playing. The rock and roll players, and even the really great rock and roll blues players, they don't play any rests. And those are important musical notes, the rests. I mean, I say the best notes I play are rests, and people think I'm joking, but I'm serious.
Yeah, yeah. Are there certain people that were on the wish list that it just didn't come together?
Yeah, sure. There were.
Anything you can mention?
Well, I mean, Lyle wanted to do it. He was there that night the idea came, and he's just working constantly.
Yeah.
And we just couldn't get it together. And... I so wanted to do a tune with Dion. And again, it was just a question of... after a while, the record company, the president of the record company, was his hair was on fire, you know, because You know, there used to be record stores or CD stores. Once upon a time, children, there were such things.
Whose garden was this? Yes. Must have been lovely. Of course, you worked a lot over the years with Dylan. Did you even dream of trying to approach him to do something?
Well, I let them know I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's the same story again. I mean, he's got so much going. He works constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, the never-ending tour of Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Now, you produced an album with him that never saw the light of day, right?
Well, a couple of the tunes did, actually.
Yeah.
On that CD set that he put out where you could buy two discs for a certain price, and if you wanted the third disc, you had to mortgage a body part. One of the tunes that I produced is on the two disc. I did Miss the Mississippi and You.
Right.
And then the first tune on the third disc, but Duncan and Brady, is another one I did.
When did those sessions take place?
1990-something.
Was it sort of right before Time Out of Mind in that period there?
I'm very bad about judging time periods.
Well,
but I will tell you, it's the only Dylan sessions that were never bootlegged because I took the masters home every night.
Okay. Why did they not get released at the time?
He didn't have to.
Mm.
His contract requires that he turn out a certain number of albums, I think two a year, I think. And that's a pretty big strain. So I don't know. You'd really have to ask him. I think at least part of it was that he'd like to have some stuff in reserve. And I think the other part of it was I did a lousy job mixing. I really did. I played it to him, and he said, "That's terrible. Go back and listen to the roughs." And I went back and listened to the roughs. He's absolutely right. The rough mixes are better. And I also realized, you know, Blonde on Blonde and Highway 61, you know how that there's a very unusual sound to those two albums that you don't hear on anything else. That's because I'm convinced that those two are rough mixes.
Hmm.
And that's that sound. You hear the room sound, you hear...
And they came out the same year, I think. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you have good memories of those sessions you did with Dylan back in the
Very
day?
Good memories.
Yeah? Any favorites?
Well, I remember at one point he had the guitar over his head because there was a pick stuck in it. He was shaking it, you know. And I said, "Bob, do you need a pick?" He said, "No, I got one right here." And another one, Nancy at the time was singing in a choir. She was the bright face in a choir. It was a black church choir. Mm-hmm. And we were working on a tune. He wanted to do a lot of tunes that I had recorded, including some of my tunes. And this was one that I had done during the disco epidemic. And it had a kind of a disco groove to it. It's an old church tune called Nobody's Fault But Mine.
Right.
And the choir was there to sing it, and they were on one side while Bob was trying to find a groove to it that wasn't going to be disco because that was locked in his head. And he's working on it for a while, and Nancy told me this because she was over with the choir. They had a little prayer, which went, "Dear Lord, please help this man find whatever it is he's looking for." And with a quickness.
Amen. Well, he tended to work quick, though, didn't he?
Yeah.
You did record a couple tunes with somebody who had worked with Dylan over the years. We're talking, of course, about Levon Helm.
Yeah.
And you did those up in Woodstock in Levon's studio?
At his studio.
And how did those go?
Well, I don't think I can. I had more fun any time.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it was really great. At the time, Levon was not able to talk. He was having some problems with his throat. So Larry Campbell produced the sessions. He wrote beautiful horn charts and for one of the tunes. And the other one we did on a whim.
Which is, I thought of it as Wild About My Lovin', which is the way the Spoonful called it. But it's an old Gus Cannon tune, right?
I think, actually, the copyright is credited to somebody else.
Okay.
It's an old tune.
Bring it with you when you come, which is kind of an acoustic blues thing, right?
Yeah, it's jug bandy tune.
Yeah, but the other one is a tune that kicks off the album, and it really kicks it into a good gear, and maybe we could kick it off here, maybe to wind things up.
Shuffle an A. I know it's over, baby. Honey, don't worry, I ain't mad. I know it's over, you don't have to tell me. But baby, I ain't mad. And tell you the truth, little girl, you're not the best thing this child ever had. It won't be long, oh, baby, till you fill your bed. Won't take long, mama, till you fill your bed. I know you maybe half an hour, but you could be walking those streets a long old lonesome time before you find a man like me to curl your toes and roll your eyes back in your head. About my feelings, you never did break my heart. Yeah, look, you really didn't break my heart. And don't give me that stuff about how you ain't half the man that I am, because little girl, you should have known that right from the start. Hey, don't talk about it, because I don't want to hear you lie. And turn off the waterworks, baby. I refuse to stand here and watch you cry. And one more thing, you best get your tongue out of my mouth, because I'm kissing you goodbye.
And that's a David Bromberg song.
Yeah.
Called Tongue. We didn't have Levon on drums, but we did have the great Tony Leone on drums on that, and his bandmate from Ola Bell, Byron Isaacs on bass. Brian Mitchell playing the Hammond B3 again, man, playing the heck out of that. And not on this tune, but on some of the others, the wonderful backing vocals of Kathleen and Nancy from Angel Band. And, of course, David Bromberg on the guitar. The album is Use Me, new on Appleseed Records. Is there anything you feel you take from these sessions that's going to inform what you do going forward, David?
I don't know.
That was the question you weren't prepared for.
I you know, every session was so different.
Yeah.
And I would say the thing that I took out of each one of them was a really good feeling and in my heart and enormous gratitude for these people to take their time and not only find me a song or write me a song, but to take the time and produce it. And, I mean, that's such a gift.
It is a gift.
Yeah, it's a huge gift from each of them.
you took quite a time off, as you referred to earlier, when you were studying violin and getting into the violin making and now being a violin dealer. Do you find you've come back now as a studio guy and a touring guy with a renewed sense of enthusiasm? Is this something you found after all this time you actually missed?
I would have a hard time saying I missed it. Until I started enjoying it again. You know, I stopped because I was burnt out, and I was too stupid to realize it was burnout. I thought I was no longer a musician. That's pretty dumb. And during that time, I really hardly touched a guitar. And when I did, it was like at a, you know, at a picnic. Somebody's got a softball and a bat, and you play with it. And then after that, you don't think about it again until the next picnic. So I did some shows like that. But it wasn't until I moved to Wilmington, and I started the jam sessions, and really fine musicians started traveling far to play at those jam sessions, and I started to have a real good time.
Well, we missed you, and we're so glad that you're back as a recording artist with this new CD called Use Me. Also back on the road more often.
Yeah.
David, thanks so much for being back here at WFUV.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having us.